Growing up in school, I always heard kids say that they had ADHD or ADD. I did not know what that meant. I do now. ADD is attention deficit disorder, and ADHD is attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. Today's popular self-diagnosis is anxiety, which I hear a lot in passing. It is safe to say that I have been surrounded by mentions of mental health, but never really learned much about it. Here to help us learn is Mark Salzer, who is a professor at Temple University and is the director of the Temple University Collaborative on Community Inclusion of Individuals with Psychiatric Disabilities. He was most recently an associate professor in the Department of Psychiatry at the University of Pennsylvania School of Medicine. We welcome him as an expert on our show. Welcome, Professor Salzer. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks, Haley. It's great to be able to speak with you about this.
Now, we've all heard of mental health. Can you define it for us?
We were actually talking about this, kind of the distinction between mental illness and mental health. So let me start off by defining what we usually think about as a mental illness. A mental illness is something that affects your thinking, your feeling, and your behaving. So how you think, feel, and behave is usually how we think about it. And it's usually problems in those areas, right? So you mentioned anxiety before. Anxiety is actually very common in the general population, and anxiety becomes a mental illness if it affects your thinking, feeling, and behavior in negative ways that significantly disrupt your life. Mental health, on the contrary, is a term that we use pretty colloquially. We use it very broadly. But in our field, I'm a clinical psychologist as well, a lot of us talk about mental health in terms of not just the absence of an illness or a deficit or a disorder, but it's also the presence of wellness, hope, feeling happy is mental health. So it's not just the absence of the illness, it's also the presence of good things, good emotions, good ways of thinking, good behavior would be mental health.
Can you explain the chemical imbalances associated with mental illness or, I guess, mental health, either or?
Well, usually we think about chemical imbalances associated with mental illness, even though there are chemical differences in our brains when we're feeling hopeful and happy and those kinds of things. But I'll focus on, broadly speaking, the chemical imbalances associated with mental illnesses. There are a number of things that happen in our body. When there are certain emotions that are happening or certain feelings that we're having that not only affect our physiology. So, for example, anxiety you mentioned or stress actually is associated with a release of cortisol that goes throughout our body and basically creates that fight or flight kind of reaction or behavior. And for some people, when they're feeling anxious, they might choose flight or not necessarily choose it, but they might run away from problems or not want to get out of bed or do those kinds of things. There are chemical imbalances that people theorize as being associated with some of the mental illnesses like schizophrenia, bipolar disorder, and depression. Are usually thought to have to do with some type of chemical imbalance in someone's brain that makes them susceptible to certain experiences, certain emotions, ways of thinking or behaving under the right circumstances. So chemical imbalances plus environment and history and experience are all associated with mental illnesses that people experience.
What influences mental illness? Is it food? Is it technology? Is it vaccines? What is the cause? Some causes of mental
well, illness? let's take away vaccines right off the bat. Vaccines haven't been connected to any type of mental illness. I would say that anything that affects our emotions can exacerbate a current mental health issue or mental illness that you might be experiencing. It might set off an episode. It could do those kinds of things. But usually I wouldn't think about food or those kinds of things. It's usually going to be major life circumstances that are associated with a mental illness, particularly stress. Or the onset of a mental illness. Usually it's stress, usually it's some type of major life event These could be negative events like losing a job, living in poverty, breaking up with a boyfriend or girlfriend or significant other or something like that. It can also be positive events. Can be stressful for us. So getting married, starting a new relationship, those kinds of things can set off a mental illness as well, especially the stress associated with these kinds of things. So that's a pretty simplistic way of thinking about it, but those are the types of events or things that really lead to mental health issues that people can experience.
Now, we're on a college campus, and I always have my phone. Do you think technology influences the increase of mental health or mental illnesses that we're, you know, are we overstimulated, overexposed?
Yeah, well, I mean, there are studies that have come out recently. There was a recent one at the University of Pennsylvania with students over there that showed that students who, I think, used their smartphones for more than 10 minutes a day experienced more anxiety and stress than students who used their cell phones, their smartphones, for less than 10 minutes a day. So I would say that that smartphones are certainly part of the issue. I would say, broadly speaking, it's I think college students are exposed to a lot of information, a lot more information through smartphones, through the internet, through other types of venues as well, social media and other types of media. So we have a lot more information now, and I think that that contributes to stress as well, stress and anxiety that young people experience. Suicide rates are going up. And this is a challenge for us. Some of it could be the more complex society, just exposure to a lot of different types of information. All of these kinds of things can be really stressful, as well as hearing about suicide attempts and suicides that other people have pursued. That also is associated with increased suicide. So the more suicide that happen begets more suicides. So that's the downside of information and media and those kinds of things. The upside is that I think college students these days are more familiar with mental illnesses and mental health issues in general. We talk about it a lot more. I think college students feel more comfortable talking about these things than maybe 10 or 20 or 30 years ago. I think students are more aware of services that are available. They're aware of medications, therapies, the counseling center. So that's the good side of all the information that's out there. But there's a lot of us who are still concerned about the fact that while students know about this, there's increased awareness of their own mental health issues and increased awareness of the services that are available. They're not either not pursuing those services the way that they need to be pursuing them, possibly because of prejudice and discrimination, or what's being delivered might not be as effective as it could be. In the case of suicide in particular, we know the kinds of things we need to be doing, and it's not always happening. And this isn't just an issue at Temple. It's an issue on college campuses around the country. And I'm not picking on Temple, but we know that suicide is unfortunately all too common. And we know that students are thinking about suicide, and we need to do a better job talking about these issues in the classroom, with advisors, in the residence halls. We need to talk about this all the time. It can't just be a 30-minute presentation during freshman orientation. We need to be talking about these issues. We need to let people know that we care. We need to be providing support and truly mental health-oriented types of interventions. So again, not just about eliminating depression, we need to promote wellness among students and make that a priority. And that those are the kinds of things that that need to be prioritized really on college campuses all over the country. Very important.
Can mental illness be cured? If so, in what ways? If not, what interventions are in place to kind of help combat it as much as possible?
All right. Well, that is a very thick question, so you might have to remind me of of some of it. So can it be cured? So cure is a funny word. I won't answer that either yes or no. I would say that mental illnesses can absolutely positively be treated. So there are effective treatments that are available for many mental health issues that people experience. There are medications, there are psychotherapies, there are evidence-based practices out there that can be beneficial. They're sometimes not beneficial for everyone right away. Or the same intervention might be effective for one person but not another person. So we typically try to encourage people to try different things. If medication X doesn't work, try medication Y. If therapy Z doesn't work, try therapy B. Because there will likely be something out there that that will be beneficial to you. But we also know that there are other types of interventions that are helpful as well. Social support is beneficial, so talking to other people, having friendships, having relationships with other people, people you can talk to and share things with, your family members obviously are important. Being able to talk to administration and faculty and staff is also important for helping to address mental illnesses that people experience. Some people will experience maybe one bout of a mental illness or one episode of a mental illness in their lifetime, and that might be it. So at the age of 19 or 18 during their freshman year, they got really stressed out and things were bad and they broke up with their high school girlfriend and they took a couple classes that were really difficult. And maybe they had a depressive episode and didn't go to class for a couple of weeks and didn't do well. But spring semester, they picked it up and they never had a problem ever since. And there are some people who might have a couple of episodes in their lifetimes. So they can sometimes be recurring for some individuals. But the key take-home message is there is help out there. There are things that can be effective and not to give up, to keep working at it, keep doing something about it. You mentioned before that I direct a center called the Temple University Collaborative on Community Inclusion of Individuals with Psychiatric Disabilities, which is a mouthful. We are a federally funded center. We're funded by the National Institute on Disability, Independent Living, and Rehabilitation Research. And our focus is on how to promote full community inclusion and participation of individuals with serious mental illnesses. So in particular, we focus primarily on people diagnosed with schizophrenia, bipolar disorder, and major recurring depression. And our focus is not necessarily on the treatment of the illness directly. So while I've been trained to do psychotherapy and I've been involved in some of the drug studies that I mentioned earlier, that's not the focus of the type of work that we do. Our work is about, our work as it pertains to college students is how to support college students who have a serious mental illness to be successful in college. What are the types of interventions and supports and services that we can offer to support them in being successful, knowing that they may or may not have an episode one time or multiple times while they're a college student? How do we support them in making their way through college and hopefully having a successful life and career? The types of interventions that we look at are First of all, developing proactive plans with somebody to help them, support them in identifying when they might have problems. How do they know when there might be an episode of depression coming, or mania, or bipolar disorder, or something, some kind of psychotic process, helping them identify when those things might be happening, and helping them identify what supports and services and treatments they're utilizing to make sure they end whatever's happening as quickly as possible. So maybe if they haven't been taking medications, so they want to start taking medications again? Do they want to get therapy from somebody? Do they want to do something else to address their possible impending illness that's happening? So we don't provide the therapy or the prescriptions or those kinds of things. We kind of coach the student in helping them problem solve and think through, identify that they're starting to have problems and identify what they want to do about it. So those are some of the interventions we look at. The other interventions that we look at are more prevention oriented. What are some of the things that the student does that makes them feel good? There's something that we call personal medicine. So if you know going to the gym makes you feel good and helps you keep away the anxiety and the stress and the depression and the suicidal feelings, then how do we support you in going to the gym more often? Maybe you like yoga class. Maybe you like going to the library, or you need to go to a movie 2 days a week, or hang out with friends 3 days a week, or call your parents twice a week. What are the things that you do that make you feel better and that will keep one of these episodes from occurring? And we support students in developing those plans and help them develop a plan and a strategy for continuing that plan throughout, so they don't need reminders. They get into a regular habit. So those are some of the things we do. Some other things we do is help support students around basic academic skills. Not all students know how to effectively study or manage their time or manage their work and school and social life. And so we work around time management skills, studying skills, making sure supporting a student and finding a good set of academic habits. And students with mental health issues might be particularly susceptible to problems when if they don't know these good study skills or good academic habits. They might be have more problems than other students might. One of the last things we do to support students is really help them engage as much on campus as possible. Because of prejudice and discrimination towards people with mental health issues, usually most students will say that their fellow students accept them, but they're concerned about faculty, they're concerned about administration, they're concerned that people might know, and they might start to isolate in their rooms, become more lonely and isolated, and not come out and really help them engage on campus and go to sporting events and join clubs, because those are good predictors of success in college. And we have some research indicating that students with mental illnesses are not as engaged on college campus as other students, and it's important to encourage their engagement. And I guess this is the last thing we do, which is supporting students if they have experienced a mental health crisis. I certainly hear from students sometimes who haven't been able to come to class because they haven't been able to get out of bed. They've been so depressed, or somebody might have been involuntarily hospitalized or something like that. And losing a week or two of school, you might miss assignments, you might miss an exam. And really working with those students to make sure that that these health issues are that they don't just give up and say, oh, my professor won't help me out or won't do anything, to really help them come up with a plan for how they can get back in the classroom and get back to school as quickly as possible. And so we do some coaching with students around how to talk with faculty, how to get the accommodations they need, how to get the services they need to be successful. And there are many professors on campus. We hear from students. We know about mental health issues. And some of us will support students to varying degrees. You know, especially if we think that somebody is being really open with us, and we don't even need to know details. But if something really has gone on, and maybe there's some documentation from a doctor, you know, we'll be very happy to give extensions on things, take an exam a week or two later, hand an assignment late. So we really work with students to help them figure those things out as well.
And what would you recommend for a student who maybe has a friend who is, in the beginning of the friendship, they didn't, you know, have a problem, but it seems that they've developed some sort of recurring, you know, mental illness, and they've just become dependent on that friend, but, you know, attitudes are contagious, so it's starting to affect them. What would you recommend that student?
Yeah, well, the first thing I would encourage any of your listeners to consider is there is a program out there called Mental Health First Aid. This is a program that teaches lay people, non-professionals, how to understand mental health and mental illness issues, and how to respond to friends and family and people we know in our lives who might be experiencing a crisis, and or an impending crisis. And a lot of it is our being there, being available to listen. It's not to do counseling or therapy or necessarily problem solving, but to listen to the person, and, you know, ask them, how can I help you? How can I be of support? What would be useful to you? Those are the kinds of things that we can typically, we should be typically doing with our friends, our family members, those kinds of things. I absolutely understand someone who might get frustrated over time with a friend or a family member or somebody that they know that you've been there, you've tried to be present, you've tried to be helpful. And I guess I would say that the best thing to do in those situations is to be as honest as you can and say, you know, I'm really, you know, I'm here for you. I'll always try to be here for you. But just want to let you know, it's also hard, you know, it's stressful for me. I see you, you know, you're talking about these things, but you're not doing anything about it. And that's hard for me. That's stressful. And sometimes I might need a break. Sometimes I might not be able to respond to that text right away. I might need a couple days off, or might not be able to see you for a week or two. And it's not that I don't care about you or whatever. I need a break for myself. I think, you know, honesty, as long as it's kind and loving and supportive and respectful, is certainly better than just vanishing and not being there for the person. But yeah, it's hard for caregivers too, and there are interventions out there as well for people who care about somebody with a mental health issue, because it is challenging and stressful.
Our time together has come to an end. That discussion was very enlightening. Thank you again to Professor Salzer for joining us. Make sure to tune in next semester for more episodes.